Okay, now I got to be careful what I say. Actually, most modern medicines actually originated from nature. And then these chemical constituents found in certain plants, which have been shown, been utilized for a few thousand years. But obviously, I'm not prescribing anything, but many of the modern pharmaceutical drugs are compounds that they got from plants and that they isolate, because they can't patent nature. But if they can find the compound that they feel is responsible for the effective treatment or possible cure in their eyes, then they can patent it.
Disasters and emergencies happen to good people like you every day. The frequency of these events are increasing at an astonishing rate. Now is the time to take responsibility for preparing and empowering yourself for the inevitable. Welcome to the Survive University Podcast, where we provide an education in preparation, giving you the tools to get ready, be ready, and stay ready. Now, let's get on with today's lesson.
Listen up, my preps. Welcome to another episode of the Survive University Podcast, where we discuss research-based solutions focused on preparation for protecting your life and your health during an emergency or a disaster. Our topics cover all things survival as we discuss with industry professionals on how to help you triumph over the toughest times in your life. I'm your host, Hakeem Isler, and on today's episode, we're talking to my friend and my mentor, Richard Cleveland of Earth School in Hendersonville, North Carolina, near the Great Smoky Mountains in Western North Carolina. He was the lead instructor at Time Brown's Tracking School, one of the most premier schools of survival in New Jersey, and now is an all-around nature man teaching these survival skills at his own school, which, as I mentioned, is Earth School in North Carolina. So now turn on your ears and put on your thinking caps. Class is in session. So Richard, it's so good to have you with us today. We've been hanging out a lot over this last year, doing some things. You've been teaching some really amazing things. I think it's really cool. You have a really great perspective on survival. I think it would be good for you to talk to people about, one, why you got in survival. I mean, you grew up in New Jersey and you have a very interesting background. No, you didn't grow up in New Jersey.
I grew up in Illinois.
Illinois. Okay. Yeah. Okay. So talk to me about how you went, you came from Illinois to being at Tom Brown's Tracking School and going that route.
To start out, I got my interest in the outdoors when I was very young. The story I like to tell is that when I was around 5 years old, my mom bought me a butterfly net for my fifth birthday party. And she literally just about had to tie me down to my chair to keep me from leaving all my friends that came to my party, because I wanted to go and catch butterflies and bugs right away. And so I was really into that, and just really excited about being able to sequester flying things and crawling things and really investigate them. So I spent a lot of time looking through World Book encyclopedias, trying to figure out what these things were that I had caught, and just had a profound interest in nature. I was still a really good athlete and went that route as well. But I'd spent a good amount of time in nature. Whenever I had a chance, I was out playing in the fields and, catching bugs. And then in my mid-20s, I was in a family painting business. We were doing commercial painting. And a friend introduced me to some books that Tom Brown Jr. had written. And Tom Brown's story is really unique. He says that from the time he was 8 until 18, he was taken under the wing by an Apache elder or medicine man named Stalking Wolf. And that he and his friend Rick in New Jersey were spending weekends and after schools with this native elder, learning wilderness survival skills from a very natural native base. You know, learning not just the physical skills, but also perhaps some of the Native American and spiritual meanings behind them, which I was really attracted to. And after reading his books, I always knew I didn't want to be a painter for the rest of my life. And when I was 30 years old, I went out and I took my first class at Tom Brown School in August of 1990. And from there, I took classes for about 2.5 years. And it became pretty clear to them that I wasn't going to leave anytime soon, and that I was, you know, really enjoyed what I was doing, and they were looking for an instructor. And I got hired on in the spring of 1993, and I taught there for 5 years before I moved myself and my school to Western North Carolina.
Oh, wow. So I find your story interesting because here you are, you know, you like some of the nature stuff, but I mean, you aren't really doing that like all the time. You were a part of your family business, it sounds like. And you went off and you started getting into the survival. And so, you know, as I've talked to you, but the audience doesn't know, you know, you are a person who really believes in connecting with nature. And do you mind telling us, in a society like today where everybody is tapped into the computers and their phones, they're just not getting any natural time, you know, out in nature. What's the importance of that from someone like yourself who's been doing it now for how long have you been doing survival?
I've been teaching full time for about 29 years. I'm almost in 30 years, so maybe I can say 30 and cheat a little bit.
Yeah.
But, you know, Tom Brown School was very Native American orientated, and I was attracted to that. You know, my heritage is from Europe. I'm mostly Danish, Irish, English, and a tiny bit of German. And I had this epiphany one day when I realized that, you know, I'm really not Native American, but my ancestors at one time had the exact same relationship with nature that the Native Americans did. They had the same very strong physical, spiritual, and emotional ties to nature. And then it kind of hit me between the eyeballs. I was like, wow, it's everybody's ancestors had that same connection with the natural world. It provided everything that they needed. Everything that they made came from nature. All their food, their medicine, their clothing, all their utensils like pottery, their shelters, it all came from nature. And that was really profound for me because I realized that what I was learning was just, you know, was not just Native American skills, but I was tapping into the wisdom of my own ancestors and their close relationship with nature, with God's creation.
Mm. Mm. So that drove you deeper. Why do you think this type of knowledge is important for just anyone, though?
Well, I think it's pretty obvious to see that that we're moving in the wrong direction, meaning we're moving away from nature. The Cherokees lived in Western North Carolina, where I'm living now. This was Cherokee country. And here's something to ponder for you folks. They claim that they had an 8 to 10,000 year oral history, that all of their stories, traditions, and skills, knowledge of medicines and animals, was all passed down by word of mouth and by example, with no written language. In fact, the Cherokees didn't even have a written language until about the mid-1800s, when they were trying to find their own identity to further assimilate into, you know, white society, kind of on the fringes. And to me, anybody that can live in balance with the land for 8 to 10,000 years is doing something right. You know, let's be honest. We've only had automobiles now for, you know, since about 1900. And, you know, now we have to worry about air pollution and we have to worry about so many things that they really never even thought of. And, you know, they had a few things that we don't have today. They had clean air, clean water, clean soil, and all their things were provided for them. And there was no pollution. They never took more than they needed because that was a silly concept to them. Ownership meant nothing to them from the research I've done. And I think that the way our society is heading, I think that we can learn a lot from our ancestors and we can learn to find a balance and get some of that respect back that I believe is missing in society today. And the survival skills go hand in hand with that because they teach you what your true needs are as opposed to your wants.
Mm, mm. I like how you put that, needs versus wants, you know, because we've transitioned. Now we need everything. We want everything,
exactly.
You know? And it's not really what It's not really what we need, you know, but we want to have it anyway. And we want to have it without any hard work. Do you have anything to say about that concept?
Which concept? You mentioned two things there.
Let's talk about the hard work concept, you know?
Well, we're seeing that today, obviously we've all been in this crazy world since this pandemic came out, you know, and we're well past the 2 weeks to flatten the curve kind of thing. And now all these businesses are closing and they're having trouble because they can't find workers. It's like nobody wants to work, and, you know, because they're getting checks from the government. And so that it doesn't seem to be the drive, you know, they're not thinking about, you know, the way that the Native Americans would, or our own ancestors, about, oh gosh, I got to get up and I've got to go to the creek and get water today. And I've got to make a fire. I've got to go gather some food, you know, from the wild. And, gosh, you know, I got this cut on my arm. I better go find, you know, something to tend to that cut, like, you know, like a plant like yarrow or something. They're just kind of sitting around. And so it's, I think it's a dangerous place to be, because people's motivation has been changed along with this modernization that we like to say is progress. Well, what's happening right now, I think arguably, is nothing like progress. It's the exact opposite.
Yeah. It feels like, or it seems like when you strip, you know, when you strip people or you put a person in a situation where they don't have to work and they don't have to go out there and push hard and they don't have to overcome, you know, and not to say there's not any adversity right now. There's a lot of adversity, but, you know, we don't have to deal with the adversity at work and things of that nature, that you're seeing people having all of these different dysfunctions surface. You're seeing people having these different issues. And so I really think that there was a lesson there in the past, that having to go out and get water, having to go out and get food, these valuable, you know, things that I had to do every day actually really brought about a sense of strong purpose. And in that purpose, also a sense of strong connection. And now that we're in a place now that people don't have to get up and work, they're not necessarily going to get water and things of that nature, but they're trying to keep their water on. They're trying to keep their lights on. But now they don't actually have to, in many cases, people don't actually have to work to do that, because like you said, there's this money coming, that we're seeing this loss of purpose. It's just not there. It's like, well, I can just sit here and watch television all day. And that's not for everybody, just to be fair, because there are people out there who are looking for jobs and trying to get things done and, you know, really trying to grow. But it seems as though there's also a huge portion of the population, because when I drive around, I see so many, and this is me, my world is not the world, but I see so many signs like help wanted, help wanted, help wanted. So I'm like, where are all the workers? If all of this help is needed, where did all the people go, you know? So it's like that lack of purpose. But, you know, let's go back to these survival skills and let's look at like the idea of, you know, Hurricane Ida just came through and a lot of people suffered, you know, especially in my hometown, Jersey, especially New Brunswick, New Jersey. I'm seeing places that I grew up that are underwater for the first time ever. And so all those folks are without their homes, without their cars, without food, and they're just relying and hoping that somebody comes, the government comes and helps them out. What do you think about that?
Boy, that's a loaded question there. You know, obviously, I think most people would agree that they're not as prepared as they would like to be. But what I've noticed is that, for instance, here's an example. When I teach people what I do for a living, and I say, well, you know, I teach, you know, wilderness survival skills, nature-based, you know, survival skills. And oftentimes I'll get a comment back that says, why do I need to learn survival skills? And before I answer that question, I like to turn it around, and I'm saying, you know, I said back to them, it's like, why wouldn't you want to learn how to take care of yourself, right? Because that's what got you here. If it wasn't for the connection that our ancestors had with nature and their deep understanding of the resources, and not just recognizing them, but utilizing them and knowing how to, we wouldn't be here right now. We wouldn't be having, you and I wouldn't be having this conversation right now. And usually when I throw that back at them, like, you know, why wouldn't you want to learn how to take care of yourself? It's like looking at a deer in the headlights, because, you know, it's hard to say, well, I don't want to learn how to take care of myself.
Yeah.
But sadly, and I'm sorry to say this, but there are a lot of people that really are not interested in learning these skills. And yet these are things that aren't just used for survival purposes. Most of us will never be in an actual real survival situation. But it's a reconnection to ancestral knowledge that all peoples share throughout the world. And once you get into it, you really start to feel connected to nature. I played in nature when I was a kid all the time. In fact, my mom, she kind of knew I was out in the field somewhere playing, but she didn't worry about me, but I was always in nature. And today, you want to find a teenager, and all you got to do is find their cell phone or find an outlet that they're plugged into playing some kind of game. And what that's created is it's created, in a way, a fear of nature, not just a lack of interest in nature, but in many cases, a fear. And it's headed in the wrong path. Technology, like anything else, is a wonderful thing, but it really depends on how it's used. But we are creatures that depend on natural resources. And the further that we get disconnected from them, unfortunately, the quicker we're going to use them up and disrespect them.
Hey guys, there is a lot of information in this podcast episode, as well as all of our other episodes. We distilled down some of the greatest lessons from all of our episodes that we share with you. You'll find that information on our Patreon account, where we would like to invite you to come over for $4 a month. You can join our Patreon account. You can help support us, keep us doing this good work, and then also learn some valuable skills. If you're looking to get more education, get into some courses, join us at our SurviveUniversity.com website. Again, that's SurviveUniversity.com, where you can gain the knowledge that you need to really grow your survival expertise. You know, it's hard-pressed sometimes to talk to people and, you know, get them to recognize, like, hey, anything can happen. You know, these disasters are happening everywhere. Fires everywhere, hurricanes everywhere, floods everywhere. Why aren't you taking these things serious? You know, where at least you have some understanding of how to take care of yourself. And I'm really at a loss at understanding why more people aren't taking those preps. More people aren't, you know, and it doesn't mean going overboard and you have to have 5 years worth of food in your basement or something. You know, if you do, more power to you. But, you know, having the resources that you need to take care of yourself. Have you had, in all your time where you're telling people and you're trying to teach people, what is their resistance? What do you think the resistance is there?
I can think of family members, which will go nameless for now, that I've had conversations with, and some of their attitudes are like, well, it doesn't matter. There's nothing I can do about it anyway. I just have to deal with it. And I'm like, well, you know, you've got a family and you've got kids and you've got grandkids and, you know, just having some rations around the house, having, you know, 20, 30 gallons of drinking water that you rotate out and having some extra supplies, having some, you know, even vacuum sealed beans and various goods. I mean, you know, to me that like makes a lot of sense. And to that point, you look at Hurricane Ida, Hurricane Katrina, Hurricane Sandy, all those people that were put in a situation that a very hard situation where they had nothing. And even some of them, of course, in all fairness, some of them that were prepared, those preps didn't do them any good because they probably stored them on the first floor somewhere or the basement and they all got ruined and wet. But I guarantee if you went through all of those victims and you ask them basic questions, one thing that you would never hear them say is, boy, I'm sure glad I wasn't prepared. So yeah. It just makes sense. There's nothing wrong with being prepared. Even a squirrel stores nuts for the winter, right?
Yeah.
And to not make any preparations to me is silly.
When you when people come to your class, what's the most common reason that people say that they've come there?
Self-reliance, and actually I get, probably because, my website is lovetheearth.com, I think I attract the kind of people that are, that are supposed to be there. I just think that's the law of attraction. But people are looking for a deeper connection with the natural world. People are feeling, some people are feeling vulnerable. I'm just glad they're there. I do not push the fear thing or the fear element in any of my programs or publications like others do. I just don't do that. But they're coming because they realize that the disconnection is real. Mm. And they want to be reconnected. And they also want to learn about the wild, edible, and medicinal plants that they're walking around. I do programs, and sometimes I'm surprised at how many people show up for a plant walk. I mean, I'm talking, 80 people who show up for a free plant walk. And I'm almost shaking my head in disbelief, like, I can't believe that there's this many people here that don't know the basic plants that are in their own front yards.
Yeah.
And not just what they are, but what you can do with them. It's like, okay, this is food and medicine. Here's pretty much just food with nutrition. And here's medicine. This is for, this particular ailment or symptom or X, Y, and Z. So I realized by the numbers, the sheer numbers that I get at a program like that, that there's a major disconnect. And I think there's also an awakening too. People are waking up, and unfortunately, it's taken this, this event that we've been dealing with globally for the last year and a half that has pushed people to the point of almost having to wake up, right? Mm. I think it was Benjamin Franklin, if I'm not mistaken, that said, when the well is dry, we will know the worth of water. Mm. And I don't really care how people get awakened. I just want to see people, you almost got to shake people sometime and say, hey, look at what's right in front of you here, right? You got water here in this plant. You got water in this grapevine. You got food right here. You got something here. If you cut yourself, you can pick this and you can do this. Hey, I know this isn't survival, but you can make a basket out of this. And out of this clay that you dig out of this stream bank, you can turn that into a really cool piece of pottery and actually cook in it later on. And you can feel more reliant and more connected to nature by all these skills. Have you ever rubbed sticks together and made fires? And people are like, oh, I've seen that on television. It's really cool. But I'm like, have you ever done it? No, but I've always wanted to learn. And then you show them that. I don't know about you. I know you teach these skills too. But if I can teach someone a friction fire, teach them how to make the tinder and have them go through the motions of, let's just say the actual bow drill apparatus and the bow drill fire. One of my biggest kicks is watching them make an ember and then pushing that into a tinder bundle and hoisting it up in front of their face and nurturing it and blowing on it and blowing it into flame right in their hands. It's like, I just see something change inside of them. And at that point, I know I got them. It's like, I got them. If I can get them to do that and feel that, because you felt that too, know what that's like. It's amazing. And there's an interesting way to look at it too. This is something I heard years ago and something I firmly believe, that we're all born with a little spark or ember inside of us, right? Mm. We're all born with it, but we don't realize it. But that little ember or spark is there. It's waiting to be recognized. It's waiting to be nurtured. It's waiting to be ignited and blown into flame. And that's what happens to our spirits when we feel connected. When we're disconnected, or we feel that we're disconnected from everything, which arguably our society kind of pushes that disconnect because it's full of distractions. And we try to fill that disconnect that we don't even understand with usually, well, either things like drugs or alcohol, addictive tendencies, or material things. Like, oh, if only I get this new iPhone, or if I get this boat, or I get this car, then my life is, you know, that hole's gonna be filled. But it never does. Mm. And then when they realize that, wow, the foundation of my life needs to be rooted deeply in the earth, in nature. And I believe too, without getting too long-winded here, that if we had, you know, even politicians, but let's just talk about business owners first, like big corporate business owners. What if they, their child, or when they were children, they were rooted deeply with a deep nature connection? Then their businesses would build upon that foundation, and they would simply make better choices in their businesses. And if we can get to the children and make sure our kids' feet are firmly rooted in soil, that they know the plants and animals around them, they're gonna respect it more, and the foundation is gonna be there, and anything they build upon it is just gonna be stronger because it's gonna be based on a heartfelt connection and not something that their head tells them they should do for profit or greed.
Wow, wow, that was loaded. That was amazing. So where does someone start on this process? What would you recommend? Like, so a person's listening to this and they're like, man, I'm really connecting with that, but I'm not really sure where to start at. So how does someone start to get a stronger connection with nature? How would you recommend that?
I'd recommend starting with plants, to be honest, because that's something that, you know, we can immediately learn to identify, and with guidance, you need to be safe about plants. Eat them, perhaps use them medicinally to an extent at first. A lot of the nature programs that I've seen, even at nature centers, it's kind of more based on tourism. They really don't get in depth on some of these nature walks. It's more of just the name of things. They really don't get into the deeper, you know, meanings of things. Like, you know, I can show you how to identify dandelion. But if I don't tell you all the uses for dandelion, what have I really taught you?
Yeah.
And unfortunately, a lot of the nature programs are really like that, and I've witnessed it firsthand. But I would recommend that you look at the health food stores, really good health food stores in your area. They're growing all over the country. And ask them. You know, they have herb departments. A lot of times they sell bulk herbs. And say, who in the area practices herbalism and will actually offer plant walks or teaches about plants? And then get your feet wet in that and dive into it wholeheartedly. Have them recommend certain books to you that then you can take in the field and identify with confidence and start utilizing these plants. And I would say go on as many walks that you can with various people, as many things, as much exposure to nature as you possibly can. Even just learning how to fish and things like that are deep nature experiences. When you catch fish and then clean them and bring them to the table, you know, this is all about providing for yourself. And also, schools like mine are all over the country where you can come for a day on some programs, you can come for weekends and actually learn your basic skills like, you know, fire making, shelter building, water procurement, purification, and about wild foods as well. Mm. So it's really up to you. There's lots of resources, and you know, I hate to say it, but YouTube is full of videos as well. You know, you I don't think you can really learn how to do a bow drill friction fire on a YouTube video, but you can get some pretty good ideas. There's some really good videos on there, as you've seen, I'm sure, as well. Mm-hmm. And there's some that you can tell the people could use a little bit of adjustment here and there, mm-hmm. because it looks like they're really struggling. Fire making isn't always easy, as well as you know. Mm-hmm. But you can make it hard on yourself by not understanding what's going on or what's going wrong in that moment. But it really involves that spark inside of us, right? That's mm-hmm. waiting there to be recognized, nurtured, and blown into flame. Mm. And when we experience that, I think that's when our spirit wakes up and our spirit realizes that, wow, this is a big part of why we're here, and all these other things that I've tried to do to fill that void that haven't worked, it's because I don't have that foundation.
Yeah. So just to make sure that we're clear on what you were saying, you know, you were saying go out, get some resources to help you identify the plants around you. Before you actually start ingesting them, you really need to really understand what they are and understand what they do for the human body and have someone to help you validate that. And then maybe move into that. Now, does nature offer equivalents to like modern medicine? You know, because sometimes people are like, man, I'd rather just take this pill, you know, and then go out there and start playing around. You know, does nature have alternatives to some modern medicines?
Okay, now I got to be careful what I say.
Yeah.
Actually, most modern medicines actually originated from nature. And then these chemical constituents found in certain plants, which have been shown, been utilized for a few thousand years. Let's just talk about North America for a second. You know, I'm pretty familiar with the Eastern tribes, like the Cherokees. And again, you know, they've been using these plants that I point out and teach to people for 8,000 to 10,000 years, right? That's a pretty good track record. Obviously, I'm not prescribing anything, but many of the modern pharmaceutical drugs are compounds that they got from plants and that they isolate, because they can't patent nature. But if they can find the compound that they feel is responsible for the effective treatment or possible cure in their eyes, then they can patent it, right? So yes, there are equivalents. In fact, I personally feel that taking, you know, if you have a plant, let's just say has 50 different balanced chemical constituents, which can aid the body of various symptoms and possible diseases, and you take one of them, well, what about the other 49, right? They work in conjunction with one another. So I'm learning as I'm getting older that more and more, I'm just more and more convinced that I don't think that's the right approach. There's obviously a time for modern medicine and surgery and all that kind of stuff. But too often, I see it driven for profit instead of teaching people how to not get sick in the first place and take care of themselves. So the more I study and teach about wild, edible, and medicinal plants, you know, the more I feel validated for what I'm doing, because it's making a huge difference in my life. And the feedback I get from students and friends is also, you know, also tremendous. I've seen people on numerous medications. I talked to a woman today, in fact, that she said she was on like 12 different medications for some illness. And now by supplementing wild plants, natural things, she's down to 2. And she's really excited about that. And again, I'm not bashing modern medicine, and I'm certainly not prescribing anything. I'm not telling people not to go see their doctor. But what I am saying is I believe there's alternatives out there, and you should seek it. Right? We have the internet now. I didn't have the internet back in the early 90s. We got something called Google. Maybe you've heard of it. And you can read article after article and research it yourself. Mm-hmm. It really depends on your own motivation. Here we come back to motivation again. So those are my feelings on that.
So how would a person go about starting like a holistic lifestyle? Mm-hmm. I mean, because you... which is very impressive. You live in a house on a mountain and you live in a very holistic setting. You know, you eat plants every day. You deal with certain herbs every day. You know, I know this because I know you. But maybe a person is in the city, but they want to start understanding how to live a holistic lifestyle. How would they do that? And what does that mean?
Well, if you're living in a city, it's probably going to be a little tougher. Mm-hmm. You need to seek out holistic health practitioners, and preferably not someone that just wants you to go and see them like a doctor would. But you know, maybe your community colleges might have opportunities for you to take some workshops in like a school situation. There are online courses as well that you can take. And study on herbalism. You can take entire courses online about herbalism. Mm-hmm. It just, again, it depends on how much you want it and how much you want to learn. But the internet has opened up huge pathways for accelerated learning. Mm-hmm. It's there if you want it. And so if you want it, go get it. People out in the rural settings, or I should say, let's just say suburbia, they're going to probably have more opportunities to actually study with an individual in person. Mm. Because the suburban areas have more forest preserves and state parks where some of these people are doing day classes in or guided walkabouts, you know, field mm-hmm. trips. But the avenues are there, really. I don't think it matters where you live. If you have internet access, there's really no excuse for you not searching and starting your path that way.
Okay. What does, to you, what does living a holistic lifestyle mean?
That's kind of a broad word too, but to me, healthy, you know, I think a healthy, more natural based lifestyle is possible. Mm-hmm. I've been fishing since I was a kid. I love to fish. I've even taken people on guided paid fishing trips mm-hmm. and I started hunting, in my probably around 20 years old, mm-hmm. you know, first small game. And it wasn't that I wanted to take the life of something, because I can tell you that's not fun. I mean, killing an animal is not fun. But I wanted to know what it was like to experience taking the life of something and then following through and learning how to skin it and mm-hmm. learning how to eviscerate it, to take the organs out and clean it up and then cook it. I wanted to experience what my ancestors had experienced since the beginning of time, that life and death thing, and the respect behind that, because these animals are giving up their life for you. So I would say, you know, learn how to fish at least. I'd recommend that everybody at least hunt small game once in their life and just learn how to do it. It doesn't have to be a lifestyle that way. Everyone should learn about plants and learn what they can eat seasonally. You can even preserve, you can can various plants during the course of the year. Dabble in making your own medicines. Try to consume less. You know, I think a lot of us are guilty of, we look at all the stuff that we've accumulated over the years and you're thinking, wow, I got a lot of stuff. It's really cool, but I haven't used a lot of this stuff in like 10 years, you know? Yeah. So what are you doing with it? You know, you can always find a home for that. You can sell it. You can make money off it. You can give it away. If you do sell it, you can use that money to maybe further your education in other ways. So I think it's living more within your means, living in balance, and downsizing too. Because the more you downsize and how you can lower your monthly expenses, that's when your time gets freed up to actually pursue these outdoor endeavors. Because if you've got a very high monthly payment to make, if you add up all your expenses, and you're like going, well, you know, I got to pay for that Mercedes-Benz, mm-hmm. you know. It's like, well, why don't you sell the Mercedes-Benz and maybe get a used good pickup truck or a SUV, you know, that's maybe 10 years old, and think of what that would free up for you in your life on a monthly basis. Time not just to pursue higher education, but time to spend with your family. Just get to know your kids better. Go on more family outings, and feel like you're more alive in this world than mm-hmm. just going through the 9 to 5, you know, 5 days a week, 52 weeks a year, hamster wheel.
Knowledge bombs. We tend to drop them a lot around here, and we appreciate your feedback and support for the information, interviews, and perspectives shared. Become a Patreon supporter for Survive University and get additional exclusive content not shared during the podcast. Patreon subscribers also get information on other Survive University products and projects before they're released to the public. So visit patreon.com/Survive University and join us as we continue on this journey to get ready, be ready, and stay ready like never before.
Yeah. Yeah. Wow. That's super impressive. And I agree. I agree with that assessment, and I agree with the way you explained that. I think we need more of that. And I think there are a lot of organizations and groups out there that are writing books and making movies about, you know, freeing up your life so that you can do more, so that you can go out there and kind of live your life in a different way. And it's resonating with a lot of people. People are really feeling that, and they're really going after it in a lot of ways. So one of the things that I would ask you is, what was one of your greatest, most valuable lessons during your time coming up in training at the Tom Brown Tracker School? Something that just was like, boom, that's the thing.
Well, yeah. For one, there's actually a couple things. I'll try to meld this into a little short response here. But I was kind of shy growing up. Mm. And I never thought in a million years that I would be a teacher. I never thought that. I got the opportunity, and, you know, the first time I taught, I was in front of a room full of about 60 people, and I was really hoping that they couldn't see my legs wobbling out from under me. You know, I was teaching what I really felt I knew. And I kind of worked into it. I got really good feedback right away, and started to realize that, wow, you know, nature's always been my life. This has always been my path. And so that was really empowering. But also what it taught me was patience. Mm. When you're dealing, you're teaching with that many people, and they were there for a whole week. You know what I'm talking about. You'll be mm-hmm. teaching, and you'll get someone that'll come up, and you're kind of hoping they're just going to ask a basic question, and then you get on to the next person, and mm-hmm. but they kind of park in front of you, and you know, you may have somewhere to be in 5 minutes, and you're thinking, I'm screwed. I'm so screwed. They're going to be here for the next 20 minutes. I know it. You know.
Yeah.
So it really taught me patience, which in fact taught me about myself. Right? It's, you know, when someone's pushing your buttons, you got to remember who put those buttons there. It wasn't them.
Yeah.
It was you. And another thing that people ask me too about like Tom Brown, they said, what is the greatest gift that Tom Brown ever gave you? And my response has always been consistent. Tom Brown reintroduced me to that 5-year-old little boy that I used to be with a butterfly net. Right, having that childhood innocence, that sense of wonder, that innate curiosity about everything, that when we become adults and we start having bills to pay, we drift away from. We see it in our kids, but hopefully your kids are reminding you of what's really important, and like that is balance. And so after being in a family painting business for, you know, probably 12 years or so, which I knew I didn't want to do forever. He gave me the opportunity to find out what I really wanted to do and work toward that goal and feel very confident doing so. Those were really big lessons for me. Is, you know, I always wanted to be involved in nature. And of course, you know, when you're young and you start talking about, oh, I want to be a conservation officer. I remember these conversations, and people would say, well, you know, you're not going to make any money doing that. You know, people like to kind of inadvertently kind of quash your dreams. You don't really mean to do it, but we get these great ideas, and people say, oh, you can't do that because of this, this, and this. And you go, oh, wow, maybe you're right. You know, when in fact, when you get past that and you find your path in life, because we all have something that we can do very well and better than other people because our styles are different, right? A lot of people teaching about nature and wilderness survival, like myself, but my style is different than other people, than other teachers. And there are certain people that are going to gravitate toward me, and there's certain people that are going to gravitate toward them. And that's just the way that we're made. But I think most people that are in their 9-to-5 jobs, I think a lot of them would wish that they were doing something else, but they just feel that they can't. And for me, I was able to, and it was because of the opportunity that I was given by Tom Brown. Mm.
I think you said something really great there. You said, I got to remember who put those buttons there, right? And it was me. And, you know, something that I've heard before and that, you know, I talk about and I teach is this idea that, you know, there are a lot of things we cannot control, but the one thing that we can control, and sometimes that controlling it means that we really have to stop and take a moment, and we have to really focus on our mind and our conditioning And that's how I respond to things, right? So if a person does something to me, I can't control what they do. But what I can do is I can control how I respond. But in that, I have to be able to be cognizant enough and aware enough that I'm able to stop myself from pushing that button, right? And having that response. And so that was something that I really, really liked what you heard, what you said. And the next thing that I heard you say that really, I think a lot of people, I just want to say it again so people can really know, is that idea of sometimes you look at that young person and you feel something and you're not sure what it is, but maybe it is that reawakening that you know, something in your spirit is calling out for that curiosity again. Something in your spirit is calling out for that wonder again. The moment where you look at something and you say, wow, that's a butterfly, or wow, that's a, you know, the shimmer on the water. You know, I've never seen that before. And maybe that's what you need, because the day in and the day out and the quick little funny things on Instagram or YouTube or your Facebook, you know, you're getting lost in these like digital, you know, illusions and not really seeing the world. So maybe when you're looking at that young person, it's speaking to you, right? It's speaking to something deeper in you. And so maybe a good challenge to the listeners is, you know, where do you see wonder in your life? You know,
that's great.
You know, yeah, maybe go out there and try to pinpoint that, you know, and say, maybe I should add a little bit more of that in my world, you know, and probably you'll probably see that has some way to move you back to the outdoors, move you out to just walking in a park, getting some fresh air, maybe going to get a little sun, getting out of the office. And those are the type of things that, you know, I think that are really powerful in what I was hearing you say, right?
Right.
So that was it. Now, we're coming towards the end. So let me ask you, what are you working on now? What's Richard's thing? Like, the, you know, man, I've gone to this school and I've trained with these people. And, you know, what's the thing for you?
Gosh, the thing for me is you know, I'm still learning as a, you know, as a flawed human being on this planet, right? Or in this lifetime. And, you know, I have distractions too, trying to run a business. Mm-hmm. You know, I spend my time on the computer. I'm getting help now marketing, which has taken a good burden off me because I've been doing most of this stuff myself, which, you know, keeps me out of the outdoors. When I have an online business where people are signing up online, I have distractions. And even myself, I have to remind myself to take my time or to block out time to say, okay, during this time, you're going to go for a hike. You're going to unplug and, you know, you're going to get out in the woods and you're going to, you know, explore. You're going to sit on your butt for an hour under a tree and contemplate your navel or something, you know. Mm-hmm. But I'm just really focused on my business like I always am. My thrill in life is bringing people closer to a deeper understanding and connection with nature. And that's always been my main focus. There's really nothing other than that.
Yeah, that's amazing. I have a saying that I always say, and it's finding your nature in nature.
Right. That's good.
And like really getting out there and doing it. So what's some closing advice that you know, that you would like to give to our listeners before we end?
A little exercise called the sit spot. Okay. This isn't easy at first to do, but after a while, I think you're going to crave it. And that is simply to find a place in nature. It could be on your property. It could be someplace you can drive to and get out of your car and go into the woods. Find a place and don't bring any electronics. Find a place that's very unique to yourself where you can just sit, go into the woods. It could be in an open area. It could be in the woods next to a tree, next to a stream, and just sit, lean up against a tree and just relax and try to empty the mind And it usually takes about 15, 20 minutes for your disturbance to kind of fizzle out. And then watch what happens. All of a sudden, the animals start coming out. The animals that scurried away when you walked in the woods start to appear. And if you do that, if you want something really healthy in your life, do that as often as you can, at least twice a week. I would say if you could do it 5 times a week, that would be great. And do it for about an hour. And try to get your head out of balance and your checkbook and all that kind of stuff. And just be there. Be in the woods. And I think that will affect you in a profound way. And you'll get quieter and quieter. That little chatterbox in the back of our head will slowly calm down. And from there, I think you'll find much more balance and peace, more relaxation, and come out of that for the better, that you can carry into every aspect of your life, relationships, personal, business, and otherwise. The sit spot.
The sit spot.
And it's free. It's just up to you to do it. And just sit on the ground and let nature show itself to you. And then your connection with it will come forward as well. You'll understand it better.
Well, Richard, you have blown my mind, and I hope you have blown the listeners' mind, and they go out there and they find the sit spot. And there was some nuggets in here, definitely. So I really appreciate you coming on the show to share your knowledge and your wisdom and your experience with us. And I look forward to having you back in the future. Can you tell and just remind everybody how they can get in contact with you?
Sure. You can find me on the web. You can search for Earth School, and of course in Western North Carolina. But my website is www.lovetheearth.com. It's pretty easy to remember. You can also find me on theearthschool.com as well. They're all, they're all connected. But, thank you once again for, I feel honored to, be on your podcast, and getting to know you for the rest of the year has been wonderful, and I'm certain we're going to do some great things in the future. So thank you so much once again.
Awesome. Thank you so much. And that's a good note to end it on. So all right, my preps, that's our episode for today. Thank you for listening and building your education in preparation with us. Please remember, real survival is not about what you can do as an individual, but when we empower those around us and we lift up everyone as a community. Due to this, we ask that you share this podcast with your friends, and we always appreciate any type of review that you leave us. In addition, if you're looking for training and you're looking for how to learn how to survive, you can join us at our website at surviveuniversity.com. You could also send us an email about any information or questions you might have at surviveuniversity@gmail.com. And as always, we want you to get ready, stay ready, and be ready. I'm Hakeem Isler.
I'm Main J, the OG.
And we will talk to you guys on the next episode.